Translation. The supreme enjoyer of all sacrifices accepted the incarnation of a boar, the second incarnation, and for the welfare of the earth, he lifted the earth from the nether regions of the universe. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The indication is that for each and every incarnation of the personality of Godhead, the particular function executed is also mentioned. There cannot be any incarnation without a particular function, and such functions are always extraordinary. They are impossible for any living being to perform. The incarnation of the boar was to take the earth out of Pluto's region of filthy matter. Picking up something from a filthy place is done by a boar. And the all-powerful personality of Godhead displayed this wonder to the Asuras, who had hidden the earth in such a filthy place. There is nothing impossible for the personality of Godhead, and although he played the part of a boar, by the devotees he is worshipped, staying always in transcendence. Translation again. The supreme enjoyer of all sacrifices accepted the incarnation of a boar, the second incarnation, and for the welfare of the earth, he lifted the earth from the nether regions of the universe. Om Aganatidamandasya Ganajana Salakaya Chakshulil Maliton Yenatasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. In the second canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's another verse, the first verse in the seventh chapter, which is the scheduled incarnations with their specific functions. And Lord Brahma is speaking, explaining that when the unlimitedly powerful Lord assumed the form of a boar as a pastime, just to lift the planet Earth, which was drowned in the great ocean of the universe called the Garbhadak, the first demon, Hiranyaksha, appeared, and the Lord pierced him with his tusk. And when Srila Prabhupada explains this verse in his purports, he gives another dimension of understanding to this pastime. Srila Prabhupada explains that this first archetypal demon, Hiranyaksha, who is the archetype of greed. There are six archetypical demons which personify the qualities of kam, krodha, lobha, moha, mada, matsarya, lust, anger, greed, pride, illusion, and envy, which are the six major categories in demonology, representing the six major anarthas, the six categories of anarthas, which each have many subdivisions. But Hiranyaksha is the personification of greed. Greed is the source of all inconsiderateness. Greed means one is so infatuated with his own sense gratification that, as far as he's concerned, the rest of the world might as well go to hell, which is exactly, literally, what happened in this pastime. Hiranyaksha, brother of Hiranyakashipu, was so greedy. And in those days, the ultimate object of greed was gold. And Srila Prabhupada explained that he inaugurated the gold rush, the big gold rush. There was a little one in this country, but that was nothing in comparison, because Hiranyaksha was so greedy, He exploited so much gold from the earth and hoarded it all himself that it literally disrupted the balance in the ecosystem to such an extent that the Earth's orbit was so severely disturbed that the planet was thrown out of its balance in the universe and crashed down into the nether regions to be submerged in the Garbhodak Ocean. And as an answer to the prayers of the demigods, the Lord assumed an appropriate form. If you ever seen hogs, they with their snout, they actually dig. It's remarkable. They can, I don't know how they do it, but they actually dig with their snout and find, I don't know what they find, would it find something. So the Lord went down to this dark region in the lower parts of the universe and located the earth submerged under the water in dark, and immersed in total darkness, lifted her with his tusks, placed her back in orbit, and then killed that demon, Hiranyaksha, personification of greed. And we see from this pastime what is the key to balance. It is sacrifice, which means sanctifying all our emotions, desires, everything, by offering them in service to the Lord. Placing the Lord in the center of our lives, our hearts, our thoughts, our relationships, makes everything balanced and harmonious, which is a predicate for peace, which is necessary for happiness, which automatically follows when there is peace within the soul. But that is disrupted individually and collectively when one places himself in the center rather than the Lord. And it creates an imbalance. And to the extent of that greed, everyone is affected. You can't say it just affects the individual, because everything is interconnected through a delicate assemblage of relationships. And the Lord has designed even the material cosmos in such a way that it can function harmoniously in balance. And by following that formula, we can attain the highest destination by working with the program for which the Lord designed this universe and this world, which is to purify our hearts of these egotistic tendencies. And in the relationships which we all formulate in this world, purify them by placing Krishna in the center, which restores balance and harmony when it's lost, and leads to the perfection of balance and harmony by returning back home, back to Godhead, as the fulfillment of this human form of life. When that balance and harmony is too severely disrupted by the egotistic exploits of demons, then the Lord comes and restores the order and balance by correcting the situation and killing the demoniac elements. And in this case, he himself placed the Lord back in orbit. Srila Prabhupada makes a very interesting analogy, comparison, in this purport in the second canto, where he says the exploits of the modern day demons who are plundering the resources of this earth as if they have no limit, speaking about petroleum, A similar imbalance in the world is occurring. See, in the Kali Yuga, which means the Iron Age, which also means the age of machines, oil is taken to be as good as gold. It's a very perverted concept, but it's oil which fuels and lubricates the machinery of the age of technology, another synonym for Kali, technology, of which the symptoms are quarrel and hypocrisy. Petroleum is essential to fuel and lubricate the system so it runs smoothly. In the headlong pursuits of more and more instantaneous gratification. But what is the result? The result is that the children of the earth, who are meant to be the custodians and guardians over the other species, who are meant to reciprocate with the earth as the mother which she is, and offers her milk for our sustenance, physically and spiritually, the earth has given birth to offspring in this age of Kali, which are no longer satisfied with their mother's milk, but insist on drinking her blood, which is what the petroleum is to the Earth planet. It's her blood, which is not meant for human consumption. Similar to a verse in Chaitanya Bhagavat where Srila Vrindavan Das Thakur explains in regards to the persecutions of the Vaishnavas like Haridas Thakur and the devotees in Navadvip, that under the fostering care of Kali, Rakshasas take birth in Brahmana families in this age to spite their vengeance against the good people. Rakshasas take birth as brahmanas, meaning in a position of so-called authority. So when living entities begin plundering the earth for her petroleum, which is like her blood, they become just like rakshasas. When they no longer are satisfied with the milk from the cow and prefer to drink her blood, they're rakshasas, literally eating their mother and father in the form of the cow and the bull. And more on the macrocosm level, the earth, who is our mother, and the Lord is our father, and all this plundering, exploitation, is like a spear in his heart. It's painful to him when the living entities are behaving in such a way that just creates havoc and pain for one another. These days, the ecology has become such a concern because everybody has to accept the fact that we all share the same ecosystem. If some industry is polluting the air or the water, it affects all of us. And therefore, there's so many movements. Just recently, I heard that President Bush, he's on his world tour, and some people are a little concerned, he's a little maybe too fired up in the way he's addressing other nations, and maybe a little bit warlike, and saying maybe we should concentrate more on our own oil reserves and start plundering the Alaskan reserves instead of, you know, even messing with these other countries who have come to hate us so much that, you know, terrorism has become like an all-pervading rampant disturbance to everybody's consciousness. So why don't we just concentrate on plundering our own resources in the Alaskan reserves? Another political group says, well, that's dumb. Why don't we concentrate on more self-sustainable alternative systems of energy, which is better, but it doesn't get to the root of the problem. The root of the problem is greed. It's an exploitive tendency of putting one's own sense gratification, and Kali, with all its technology, is geared for more and more instantaneous gratification, and to hell with the consequences. So the root of the problem is the greedy mentality. And therefore Krishna showed how to live a perfectly balanced, harmonious lifestyle in which culture, life becomes just an unfolding miracle. The source of power for this system is the ox. And if you're in a big hurry, there's the horse. And it's not that Krishna didn't know about technology and make things easier for Mother Jashoda by offering her a washing machine. He knew the consequences. That for that little bit of convenience, you are becoming dependent, you're selling your soul to an exploitative society and culture. When I was a kid, our neighbors were still farming with draft horses, and the tractors were just being introduced. And to me, this was like so horrendous. And I was about 7 years old going to all the farmers, one after another, and saying, this is the beginning of the end. Now, what are you talking about? This is the best thing that ever happened to us. But I knew that, you know, this is going to replace the horses, which had already replaced the oxen. And they thought it was the best thing that ever happened to them. Because in a day, a farmer could do what would have taken, you know, weeks with horses or months with oxen. And then, as I grew up, I watched the whole syndrome, which was initiated by this introduction to the Farmall Super H. No, they didn't have Farmall Super H. It was like a C model. And then the other neighbor got a John Deere. And they got into competition who could plow faster. And I was thinking, this is all illusion. So yeah, they plowed faster. And then they began producing more than what anybody needed. So that somehow disrupted the economy. So the government started paying the farmers more to not grow crops than they could have made from their crops. Then all the tractors got parked, and all the farms grew weeds. And what do weeds produce? Seeds for more weeds. And the multiflora roses, which had been introduced for fences and are just impenetrable thorns, just took over all the pastures and fields. And soon the land became unfarmable, and we started selling it off to developers who just came in and ruined everything. Whereas here in New Vrindavan, when we came here, this land had been what is called farmed out, meaning they had, with either lack of conservation practices or use of chemical fertilizers and pesticides and other things, turned the soil into something like a toxic clay. It would hardly grow anything. And I remember when we first started plowing, by the end of one furrow, the horses would be all sweaty and panting out of breath, and when they were plowing, the tugs and their chains would be stretching. And those old horse plows, you know, that top part, it's a spring. When you hook it up to a tractor, it pulls the spring out of it. They don't work right. But that spring would be stretched, and they would be laboring intensively, and that earth would just like, they'd like rip out a furrow, and it'd just crash over. And there weren't any worms, or there was no fragrance, and you couldn't grow anything in it. And for those who commune with the earth, it was very clear what she was saying. Give me manure. So we gave her manure, a resource that we had with all our cows. And it was amazing. It was miraculous to watch how over a period of years, by plowing more and more manure into the ground, after a few years, those horses or oxen could just stroll along without exerting themselves at all. The plow would just turn over this rich, lush, fragrant earth, which would be full of earthworms, and just grow magnificent crops. Now think about this. Your source of power is a team of oxen. Oxen eat the grass and grain that grows from the earth. That's their fuel. The byproduct from the ox is the power. And the cow, which has the same diet, gives as a byproduct milk. What is the real product? The demons would say their blood. The devotees would say their manure. Because that manure has put back into the earth more than the cow or ox took in the first place. Or put back everything enhanced. I don't know how they do it. It's just a miracle. How you can feed a cow or an ox hay and grain. They give you power and milk as a non-toxic, highly nutritious byproduct. And then they put back everything they took into the earth, back to mother, enhanced, more fertile than it was in the first place. And when the ox wears out and gets old, you don't have to send to Germany or Russia or Japan for, you know, parts and new ones. They reproduce. The best technology, you know, they were so proud when the 747s came out. Well, you ever see two of them get together and make offspring? They, however expert they are, they'll never figure that one out. So, we have made so much advancement by introducing the tractor. And what byproducts does it give? Highly toxic hydrocarbons. What is the fuel? Petroleum. And then, you know, it doesn't grow its own hooves, so you have to put tires and then cut down. Prabhupada mentioned that all the sandalwood forests were cut down to grow rubber trees. And to exploit the earth to such an extent that you ship, you know, petroleum around the world to fuel your tractor, to plow your garden, to grow lettuce that you don't even eat because it's cheaper to buy it at the store, flown in from California in a jet, spewing hydrocarbons across the whole country, making everybody sick. To get this thing that looks like a piece of lettuce, it's really just chemicals that somehow, by the grace of technology, look like a vegetable, but everybody knows you can't tell one from the other by the taste. And nutrition, they're all equal, nil, all toxic. Because if you don't put manure into the soil, you put in fertilizers with chemicals and blood and bone meal. So even your vegetables and fruits aren't vegetarian in such a system. And to exploit the earth enough to get petroleum products from the other side of the world, you got to have steel industry with all its toxic byproducts. And with all the fruit of technology you can get such instantaneous gratification, then who needs relationships? Just turn on the video or the whatever it is to turn on. I see people have relationships with these boxes or computers or whatever they are, but not very satisfying. Definitely doesn't foster love for Krishna. So all this exploitation of oil, Srila Prabhupada says, is disturbing the balance in the planet so much that it's jeopardized as it was in the time of Hiranyaksha, thrown out of orbit. So balance necessitates a consciousness, an awareness, a gratitude that Krishna is our father, the earth is our mother. On the macrocosm level, on the microcosm level, the cow is our mother and the ox is our father, who provides by cultivating the land, and that makes us all brothers and sisters by having the same mother and father. And forgetfulness of this leads to all kinds of greed and exploitation and imbalance and chaos and misery. And so today the earth is facing a similar plight as it did in the time of Hiranyaksha. And according to the 12 steps theology of AA, the earth collectively, the collective consciousness of most of the individuals, is in the state now of dependence or addiction called denial. The earth collectively, meaning the consciousness of the humans in general, is in a highly addicted state, addicted to their consumer goods, which are not biodegradable and are toxic from beginning to end. And all the symptoms of an addict are there collectively. You see, the military, they got their missiles pointed every which way in case anybody tries to interrupt the next quick fix. And, you know, our God is technology. And so absorbed in singing the glories of technology and laughing and belittling such concepts as karma and dharma and fate and destiny, and yet every day, some more drastically than others, events happen bearing no resemblance to man's wishes or desires, which proclaims the victory of fate and karma and destiny over man's technology, and is paradoxically labeled a trick of fate. How were those, you know, in days of yore, there were emblems of vanity like the Tower of Babel or the Tower of Ravana. But the United States is bigger and better, so we made two towers to proclaim the dualistic nature of our economic superiority to the world. And how were they brought down? By petroleum products. By the plan of some demons and some, I'm not saying the Americans are much better, but in some country, they were just so infuriated that the Americans were taking their oil. And now everybody's, you know, having a war on terrorism, and you know, do you think that's going to bring peace? So the Lord corrected the situation by assuming the form of a boar and putting the earth back in orbit and killing that demon and liberating him. But even that doesn't really get absolutely to the root of the problem. Because the root of the problem is not corrected by killing and liberating the demons, because in the Brahma Jyoti they're just going to stay kind of like asleep until their desires awaken again. They go one way or the other. And therefore, Lord Gauranga, who is the source of all the avatars, when he came to Murari's house, yelling, "Sugra, sugra," what? Boar. And Murari said, "What kind of mood is he in today?" And Lord Gauranga picked up this water pot on his teeth and held it up. And he said, "Just as previously I uplifted the earth from the depths of nescience, I have appeared in this form to uplift the world from nescience by this Harinam Sankirtan movement, which destroys anartas, which destroys greed, lust, anger, pride, delusion, envy at the root, and cures them forever by awakening love of God, love fosters harmony and balance, and real love necessitates acknowledging that Krishna is the central focal point for all loving relationships." In the Satya Yuga, there was a devotee named Vasudev, who was a devotee of Varaha. In the Satya Yuga, they didn't have deities. That was not the authorized system of worship for that age. It was meditation. Other than Nila Madhava, a unique deity, there were no deities in the Satya Yuga. So this Vasudev, great devotee of Varaha, is always praying, "My Lord, please reveal yourself to me, because without your darshan, my life is just useless." And with such devotion, such fervent prayer, worshiping and serving the Lord, that one day, right before him, visible to his very eyes, the Lord in this four-hoofed form appeared as high as the sky with beautiful ornaments on his beautiful hooves and neck and tusks. Told him that, "You are so fortunate to be living here in Navadvip, because this is my most sacred dear abode, where I will appear in the future in a golden form, and you will be my constant assistant and servant." And then the Lord disappeared. And Vasudev, who was a learned pundit, was thinking, what was this form to which he was alluding? He had studied all the scriptures. He had never heard of a golden form to appear in the Kali Yuga Navadvip. So Vasudev again went through all the scriptures very scrutinizingly. And to his amazement, this time he found everywhere hints and indications to a very secret, very special, very precious form of the Lord, whose glories are so infinite and confidential that the sages kept them somewhat hidden. Just as the most treasured objects of our heart are not to be revealed indiscriminately. But with the proper understanding and guidance, and by the mercy of Lord Nityananda, who ordered Maya Devi after the Lord's disappearance to remove that covering, at which time all the truths of the Vedas and the yet unrevealed scriptures became manifest, all by the mercy of Lord Nityananda, who is the source of all the avatars. He's not really Krishna who's the source of all the avatars. He expands as Balaram, whose superior form is Nityananda, and he expands as all the avatars. And all the avatars, they're imbued with the service mood. You can say that Krishna alone does not have a service mood. He's the object who accepts service and worship. And Balaram and Nityananda, he's worshiping and serving Krishna in every manner. But actually, Krishna himself also has service mood. His ultimate pleasure is serving his devotees. So you can say that service is the predominant mood of the spiritual world. And that's what makes it so sweet. Sweet is the taste of balance and harmony. And that's what attracts Krishna. So we should pray on this appearance day of Lord Varaha for his blessings and mercy, which are most accessible on appearance days, that he deliver us from the nescience into which we have fallen, and restore us in the balance and harmony of Krishna consciousness. And tomorrow we will be worshiping the divine advent of Lord Nityananda, who in his deliverance of Jaga and Madai delivered those demons who were the combined form of all the evil of Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, Shishupala and Dantavakra, Ravana and Kumbhakarna, all combined into one form, Jagai, who was duplicated by Madhai. All the combined evil of all the worlds in these two brothers, of which the worst of the two was Madhai. And unlike all the other demons who were given salvation by being killed by the Lord, was given love of Godhead and became such an exalted soul that those who previously would just jump into the Ganges by touching his shadow were now coming to touch his feet. And those who took birth in his family before he became Brahmachari became proud of their relative who stood with a shovel in hand on the bank of the flowing waves of the Ganges after building a ghat and on the order of his guru, Lord Nityananda, serving all the pilgrims, assisting them and taking bath in the holy Ganges, which means, just as the sages who came to Lord Sankarshan with their hair still wet, having traveled on the Ganges by mystic potencies, being wet with the water of the Ganges, meaning taking the water, which has washed the lotus feet of the Lord upon your head. So Madhai became the assistant to all the pilgrims and devotees in attaining service of the Lord and bhakti by the mercy of Lord Nityananda. So we can say that there's no difference between Balaram and Lord Nityananda, as there's no difference between Krishna and Lord Chaitanya. But there is some difference, because in mercy, Lord Nityananda is greater than Balaram. Lord Chaitanya is greater than Krishna. But of course, all this makes no sense whatsoever unless Trinadapi Sunichena, we become humble and cleanse the dust from the mirror of the heart by chanting of the holy name and understanding that for us individually, the most merciful person is our spiritual master, representative of Lord Nityananda, who came to this Western world where all the demons fled to remind them of what we've forgotten and give us hope for a life of balance and harmony leading back to our original homeland, back home, back to Godhead. Thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments?
Gurudaji asked a question this morning about why Srimati Radharani's feet are covered and not revealed, as are those of Krishna. Lotus feet represents devotional service. And the generally unspoken but acknowledged highest aspiration and ultimate goal for Gaudiya Vaishnavas is Radha Dasyam, service to Srimati Radharani, knowing that really only she can fully please Krishna the best. And our best position, both from the perspective of Krishna's pleasure as well as our own good fortune, is to become servant of the servant of the servant. Servant of the servant of the servant of Lord Gauranga means maidservant to the maidservant of the maidservant of Srimati Radharani. Because just as in Eka Chakra, where everyone lives for Nityananda, in Braj everyone lives for Srimati Radharani. And those things which are most precious and sacred to the heart are treasured and kept a little confidential, not easily revealed or exposed, so therefore covered, except for the day of her birthday. Yes. Srila Prabhupada explained that Krishna consciousness, this movement will be very prominent for 10,000 years. And then it'll pretty much resort back to the original pattern of Kali Yuga. But really, from beginning to end, this Kali Yuga is different than every other Kali Yuga. Like if you read in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the predictions for the end of the age of Kali, it sounds like current events. If we're 5,000 years into the age of Kali, and there's 427,000 more to go, and already we're just very close to the predictions given for the end of the age, what's going to happen next? And where's it going to go from here? That's because the whole trend of Kali Yuga is different in that one Kali Yuga out of 1,000 Kali Yugas when Lord Gauranga appears. Because it's his Yuga. It's not really Kali's Yuga. It's Kali's in name only. And he was not able to come at the beginning of this Yuga because Krishna stayed on this planet just a little bit past the end of Dwapara Yuga. Or what would have been the end of Dwapara Yuga, and Kali Yuga got started a little bit late. And Kali, understanding that Lord Gauranga would come in this age, attacked with all his might from the beginning of the age, knowing that he would be forced to flee the universe altogether for a 10,000 year span, just 5,000 years within his age. So when Lord Gauranga came, and we saw a similar thing when Srila Prabhupada came, it inaugurated what was just like better than Satya Yuga, like a Shuddha Sattva Yuga, just blossoming like a lotus in the age of Kali. And then when Mahaprabhu left, and then when Srila Prabhupada left, it like closed, and the trend of Kali Yuga again became like overwhelming. And therefore, those who could say that what Lord Gauranga did, and they say, and what Srila Prabhupada did is really coming to an end, you can't say that that's totally faulty reasoning, because empiric evidence would support that. But those who would come to such a conclusion do not have the wisdom of a farmer who knows the different stages of achieving a harvest. First is which you gather all the seeds in the corner of the field, and you see you got so much. You know, farmers know that a real investment is planting a seed, because you get back so much more. And then you broadcast it on the field and harrow it in, then it looks like you got nothing. You can't see any seed anywhere, or crop or anything. And then after some rains, you see here and there little patches of green, and you know that soon the whole field's going to be green. So Lord Gauranga likened himself to a gardener. And Srila Prabhupada is his representative. They were planting the seed. And then once the seed's in the soil, you don't see anything immediately. But then gradually you see the fruit begin to manifest. So that is what happened with the appearance of Lord Gauranga and the appearance of empowered Shaktavish avatars, acharyas like Srila Prabhupada. So for a 10,000 year period, as explained in the Puranas, there will be like a Shuddha Sattva Yuga within the age of Kali, meaning that Krishna consciousness will be prevalent. And then after that period, Kali again becomes prominent, and things go somewhat like the course of any other Kali Yuga, but still the effect of their appearance will give hope and guidance to those for the rest of the age, which is really why Lord Gauranga manifests such wonderful pastimes. The deliverance of Jaga and Mata is a magnificent, wonderful, amazing pastime, but it's really not so great when you consider that these individuals whom Lord Gauranga and Nityananda were saving were really eternally liberated associates who were playing an act for our benefit, but more for the benefit and to give hope for those in the rest of this age that the holy name is our only shelter. So even after the 10,000 year period, when Kali again takes charge of his age, there will be that hope that this is that Kali Yuga when Lord Gauranga came and invested the holy name not only with all his transcendental potencies, but with the Braj Bhakti, which is far superior to the potency of any Yuga Dharma in any age other than when Lord Gauranga and his personal associates themselves come. So that's the predictions for the unfolding of the rest of this age. Any other comments, questions? Yes? Gauranga Prem and Drishtadyumna and myself have been making revolution plans to get back to where we used to be. I remember in the early 70s, we had one old Super H farm all tractor. Well, it was usually broken down, so if we could not keep up with the crops and feeding the cows with our animal power, we would consider hiring a neighbor to bring his tractor. And it was like such a major decision to make, whether we're going to allow this tractor to set its wheels in the holy dham. It's like everybody was so uneasy about it. But then the tractor came and it cut some hay and it didn't really seem to hurt anything. And then gradually, we just come to accept tractors as our source of power. But some of us who were here to see personally Prabhupada's extreme concern that the oxen were not being used and or that tractors were being used can never be at peace with the fact that we just accept tractors as the way it should be. I'm not saying we have to get rid of them all. Prabhupada wasn't necessarily against them. What he was against was them replacing the oxen, putting the oxen out of service, because if the father is unemployed, there cannot be any prosperity in the family. But even more than that, Prabhupada's emphasis on ox power, on growing your own food, was not for its own sake, but was for a much deeper sacrament of relationships. Technology inspires competition. Self-sufficiency fosters interdependency and love and appreciation in relationships. And that's really the underlying reason why Prabhupada emphasized and Krishna lived a certain way. And that's even to take a mundane example of why the Amish are so resistant to change. They know that machines displace relationships. They foster competition rather than relationships of healthy interdependency. But we've just become so accustomed to it. But anybody who was here or would have been here to see Srila Prabhupada's deep concern that the oxen were not being used, that the fields were not being cultivated, that the tractors were being used, would never be totally at ease with the fact that that's what it's come to, but would be very determined to some degree, rectify that situation. So, this is our solemn vow that the oxen will be returning. Anything else? Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.